me sitting down to have lunch with somebody maybe gets me a case, maybe gets them a case, maybe gets either of us to have a conversation where we think of something that is beneficial to a client, or making a connection for somebody else that helps the person who made the connection and the two people that got connected, or the client who gets referred. It's crazy to me. And yet we find so many people that have this scarcity mindset of like, I can't help anybody else because there's only so much to go around, when I don't think the world exists that way.
Welcome back to the Performance Mindset Podcast, and we're going to explore the mindsets of business owners and entrepreneurs. I'm Amy Calandrino, and today I don't want to miss anything. I have a very special guest, Jordan Ostroff. Did I say that correct?
You did. What? And I was, when you said very special guest, I thought there was somebody else joining us too.
Jordan is not just a visionary entrepreneur and managing partner of Driven in Law, but he's also a coach to fellow lawyers, helping them run more efficient practices. And committed board member of Big Brothers and Big Sisters, his journey in law and entrepreneurship is not just inspiring, but a testament to resilience and strategic thinking. At Driven Law, Jordan and his team focus on personal injury cases, providing high quality legal services with a unique blend of compassion and technological innovation. Having faced several challenges in his career, including overcoming substantial debt, Jordan has transformed these experiences into opportunities to assist others in the legal field. Today, he balances a successful career while maintaining a fulfilling personal life. I could probably stop right there. That's the whole purpose of performance mindset. I'm just kidding. No, we're going to ask some more questions. So welcome to the show, Jordan.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. So let's start off and tell us a little bit more about your early career and what motivated you to start your law firm.
Sure. How far back? How early do we want to get?
Well, when did you first have the desire to kind of have your own company? You know, to become an entrepreneur doesn't just happen overnight. When did that thought process start? And then talk a little bit about the evolution of your firm over time.
You know, my wife will tell you I did do it overnight, but I did not. So I started out as a prosecutor here in Orlando. And so at some point, the running joke, you give a 3-year commitment and everybody starts to get stale somewhere between 2 and 3 years. So at some point towards the end of that, I was like, you know, I don't really want to, I don't want the promotion because the next stop job would be sex crimes. And everybody I talked to in sex crimes was totally miserable because you are dealing with some terrible, nothing but terrible situations in that case. And at the same time, I didn't want to stay in my current role based upon what I was going to get paid, what the opportunities were, whatever. And so I started asking I started asking criminal defense attorneys at the time, hey, if I wanted to open my own shop, what advice do you have? How do you think I would do? Whatnot. And a bunch of them gave me really great life about being, from a legal standpoint. One of them was like, hey, I actually have an office available. You can rent it. I'll throw you the cases I don't want. You know, you'll make probably at least the same amount of money just from that. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, in that case, what more is there?
Right.
And so my wife thought that we were going to see what happens over the next couple months. I jumped on that opportunity and was like, all right, I put in notice. So I gave 6 weeks, whatever it was. I gave them plenty of time, paid for the office in that time frame and jumped. And so had no idea what I was getting into. And then it got better and worse, depending upon how we look at it from there.
Well, I like that when you have something that maybe didn't go exactly the way you want to go, the way you wanted it to go, you're looking at it as an opportunity rather than, it really wasn't a failure. It was a learning lesson and kind of help to get you where you're at today. And
I wish I could say I felt that in the moment. I did not. It is only in retrospect that you are 1000% correct.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But let's talk a little bit about that. So you've had some significant challenges, including you had another company and you've also had to overcome a large amount of debt. What did you do to keep going through those tough times? And then how did you turn those into learning experiences?
Sure. Well, so so I went to Barry for law school. So I was here in Orlando beforehand. I was a prosecutor here. I launched my own firm. So at that point, and I went to UCF before that. So I'd been in Orlando for about 10 years at that time, working with current lawyers, current judges, to be lawyers, to be judges, whatever it was, just from, you know, being in the, we have a relatively small legal community in a good way. Like it is enough that you will see people consistently, not so much that you can, not so much that you're stuck with people, and not so small that you could, you know, backstab people and never see them again. So like, it's just a very, it's the baby bear. It's the perfect mix. But so when I left, I started going back to a bunch of law school friends and former trial team colleagues. And even some former trial team coaches was like, hey, I launched my own firm. I'm doing criminal defense. I started doing family law just to make sure I would have enough money, which was a terrible mistake in so many ways. And a lot of them were like, oh, I've been sending to so-and-so, but they hung a shingle day one. And I, you have a ton more experience. So at least on the more serious stuff, like I want to try you out. Or they were like, I've been sending to so-and-so. I haven't gotten anything back. I haven't been, or the clients have been complaining, whatever. And so I was able to get a decent amount of referrals at the beginning. I made a, so I told myself I left October 5th and I was like, if I can make 10 grand by the end of the year, that'll be great because that would be basically my state salary. And I did that in like 5 days. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I've got this money coming in. I've got these referrals. This will be awesome. I'll hire a marketing company. They'll tell me like how to do marketing because I don't know. I'm just an idiot trying to figure out being a lawyer, and ended up not having the experience that I expected from it. So like in 2017, my wife told me she was pregnant with our kid. At that point, we were like $200,000 in debt on the firm because I hired, you know, so I paid for a bunch of marketing and then I got enough cases to hire enough lawyers to pay for more marketing, to not make any money, to like constantly think, oh, I'll sell my way out of it and whatnot from there. And so when she told me about the pregnancy, like, thank God, I was super happy. We'd been trying for a year. And then my very next thought was like, how the hell are we going to do this? You know, we're working 70, 80 hours a week. We're making no money. And now like someone's going to hand me a baby. And so I cut more than $10,000 a month. So like $125,000, $130,000 marketing budget down to zero for 2018. My firm made $5,000 less gross revenue for the year. So not to say that the marketing was that bad, just to say that like we grew naturally from doing a great job and the marketing wasn't, you know, wasn't making a huge difference. And so once I'm not going to say figured out parenting because I still haven't figured out parenting. Once I wasn't completely drowning in parenting, I connected with Greg Eisenberg, who ended up being my business partner on the marketing company. And I was like, dude, like, please explain to me. Like, I can't imagine all marketing is fake snake oil. And, you know, he had crazy questions like, what cases do you actually want to have? You know, things I had never thought of. Who do you actually want to work with? All these crazy things, which is what led us to launch Legalese, because like there was nobody in the legal space that I came across who was doing that. There were a ton of great like marketing vendors, but there really wasn't much about helping you figure out like a true business, a true plan, a true ideal client profile. And so then like, sure, I'd get a lot of calls, but for stuff I didn't do, whether it was practice area I didn't do, geographic area I didn't travel to, whatever, because I didn't know enough to focus. And so that's really what led me to where I am now. Like the more I focus, the better it's been on everything in life.
Oh my goodness. I have on my bracelet, it says focus on there. I got to hear a keynote speaker last year, Eric Qualman, and I've become pretty focused, but like even more so. I think that you're an avid reader. I read, you know, Who Not How, and then they had like the follow-up book that Dr. Hardy had written. But I, you know, you're so afraid to let go of that like 80% of stuff that's not like a good fit for you and just focus on that like top 20% that you're going to do so well about. It's scary. But I think kind of, have you found that the more you do that and the more that you focus, the easier it becomes? Or do you still get tempted to take the shiny new thing?
It's a great question. Well, so I'm going to nitpick on focus. I agree with what you're saying from focus, like focusing down. But like I always tell people, look, you don't get in the car and just drive. you have some sort of location. You may not know where you want to go for dinner, but you know you want food. Ideally, right. You punched something in your GPS, and now you know exactly what road, where the issues are, what turn, what left, what right, where, whatever. Like, that's what you should have at first. You should have some sort of plan. I don't care how broad it is, but if you're just like, oh, I want more, that's not going to get you anywhere. It's, I want more of these types of cases. I want more of these types of sales. I want more of these types of connections. And then you go to exactly what you said. What do you want less of? I want less of these problem clients. I want less of these situations. I want less of these things. The reality is, excuse me, I think we're always going to, like, if you follow the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, we're always going to get 80% of our best things from 20% of our efforts. So there's always things you could stop doing. It is difficult to figure out what those things are. But if you don't have a plan, you don't even know what is working or what working even means. Because if you don't know what you want and you don't know what you want to avoid, then you're just like, okay, cool, like more speaking opportunities, more clients, more anything, without knowing if it's more of the right stuff, because you don't even know what the right thing is.
I agree with you. I think that when I first started my brokerage, I knew that I wanted to work with primarily like attorneys and professionals and, help guide them through their commercial real estate needs. And I knew I wanted by this point to be at this certain size. And then I got bigger, but there was no why behind it. I think it was just, I don't know that it was ego or what it was. I just felt like I got kind of stuck in this more thing, kind of similar to your like experience, until I finally had to like stop and like adjust. And what do I want to do? What do I not want to do? And figured out I want to get back to growth-minded entrepreneurs, who are coachable. And actually did a social media post about it, is, what are the things that you want? You want people that have realistic expectations. You want people that trust you. You like, what is that ideal client? And then what kind of like product is that? And, obviously, and then you have your particular practice area too. But yeah, I totally agree with you. Cause like when I lost it, I just accumulated a bunch of debt and I wasn't happy and I was working a bunch. But like, if you stay focused, I think that's the only way you really can get like that work-life balance. Otherwise you're just piling on more and more and more.
Do you know Ted Bogert?
Yes.
So Ted posted, I don't remember if it was green flags or blue flags, but like we always talk about red flag clients, but I don't think we spend the same effort on blue flags of clients or of people or whatever. And so it was really interesting. Like he had his list of 10 or 12, I think it was green flags. For me, it would be blue flags just because I'm red, white, and blue as per the background behind me. But yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I think too often we look at part of the puzzle. We only look at getting bigger, not getting better. We only look at what we don't want, not what we do want. We only look at what we do want, not what we don't want. And having both of those things, there'll be that gray area in the middle, sure. But it's a lot easier to say no to something if you know that it's too bad of an opportunity or sounds too good to be true of an opportunity as well.
Yeah. No, then there is that gray where you're like stuck. I mean, I just went through, I got approached to take on a pretty cool like consulting project like in Winter Park, and for like a nearly, it's like a $10 million portfolio, and it was really like tempting, but then the people didn't want to give me like an upfront retainer and all these other things, and I was like, oh, this is such a cool property, but I'm like, I have to like stick to, I have chocolate and vanilla ice cream. I either do commissionable work on an exclusive basis, or I do hourly work and I have a retainer. So I don't have chocolate and vanilla swirl. So you have a really cool work-life balance. You're working about 2 to 3 days a week. How do you manage this, and what advice do you have?
So how do I manage it? I have a dedicated assistant who works 40 hours a week.
Yep.
That's the beginning of it. Like if you don't have anybody else to get the work off to, it's a different situation. And look, I know I'm sitting here telling you I work 25 hours a week. My assistant works 40. Everybody else at the firm works 40. But like there are so many entrepreneurs that are working 60 hours a week or 70 hours a week or 80 hours a week. So even just that first hire is hopefully going to get you down to 60 hours. And then the next hire will get you down to 40. And, you know, you go from there,
right,
in a situation where other people, though, can turn, you know, can turn the clock off. They can clock out. Like, we are constantly on. If somebody called me with a good enough opportunity at, well, I'd be asleep at 9 o'clock at night ish, but like, whatever, at 7 o'clock at night, you got to come to this event. So-and-so's here. Like, I'll drop everything and go. But otherwise, I know that, like, normally it's Monday, Wednesday until my kid gets out of school at 2, and Thursdays, which actually empowers me to say no to more things, because I genuinely have to look at my calendar and say, like, all right, well, if you want me to speak in June at this thing, then do I have an hour now to outline it? Do I have time to review what my graphic designer sends me back? Do I have time to test it? Do I have some other opportunity to run it on a smaller scale to get feedback, to, you know, do I have time to travel to the event? Or, I mean, if it's virtual, you don't have that issue. But, like, it really forces me to do those things instead of just saying, oh, this is a great opportunity, sure, let's take it. It's really like, do I have the time? Is it worth the time? Do I have the time? Do I want to spend the time on this thing? Because I can't just say, oh, I'll work more hours tomorrow. Oh, I'll stay till 10. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Well, I think that it can start to creep too when you start to, like, let down your boundaries, and then you start to take this opportunity and this opportunity. And I've been through periods where I start to do the more, and then I'm like, no, I got to get, like, back to the core. I think my godsend, and I think you use it too, is Calendly. As like my do you use Calendly or a booking tool?
I don't. I use Lawmatics. It has booking integrated.
Oh, okay. But you use like a booking tool.
Yes.
That checks things, and then you have different blocks for different things on different days.
Yep.
Oh, that's cool. And Lawmatics, is that your product or no. Another product?
God, I wish it was my product. But it's a CRM. It's like MailChimp and Calendly and Acuity and a decent amount of case management and a great automation platform, all in one, designed for lawyers by lawyers. It's fantastic. But yeah, but what you said, like, that's, I tell everybody, live off your calendar. Half the people think that's the most awful thing in the entire world, that they're going to be overwhelmed and they'll be found, you know, dead like a hoarder under 1,000 calendar invites. The other half of the people realize it's actually the most liberating thing, because if I just tell Lawmatics or Calendly or Acuity, don't schedule me for anything on Tuesday, don't schedule me for anything on Friday, nothing gets scheduled for Tuesday and Friday. And now, you know, whatever gets filled in. But when you allow that to just say any hour that's open, and then you look up one day and you're like, when do I actually do work? When can I actually see anybody? When can I actually not rush from one 30-minute meeting to the next? It's great.
Well, I find that when you have the space, and, you know, you give yourself space in between appointments, you can really kind of like digest and like think about, like, I know after like we had lunch, I was thinking about like different things and, you know, we talked about, or even after this podcast. But if you're going from thing to thing to thing, you're not really like living in the moment, and you just kind of become like a human doing, not a human like being. And I think once you kind of escape that, you can catch yourself better once you start to get back into those patterns. So you coach other attorneys. What day do you do that? Or do you have multiple?
So I only coach on the first and third weeks of every month. And it's mm-hmm. Monday afternoons, Wednesday mornings, and then Thursday, not all day, but I have morning and afternoon blocks as well. So I've got like a dozen clients. I think I've got 3 other hour slots. And so this way I've got all of my weekly stuff is already calendared. They're not going to overtake those things. And then I've got the other days to do any of the work that I need to after it, as well as still having blocks, you know, for lunch and emergencies and whatnot in between. But that's been the system that's really worked out for me.
Really cool. How did you kind of ease into the coaching business? When did you start doing that? Like a couple years ago or longer?
No. So I got Greg bought me out of the marketing company in July of last year. And like, basically it was over this conversation. Like, I was like, hey, you know, we are doing a lot of the marketing stuff, but so many of our clients need more customized conversation. You know, sure, we can put together this whole marketing plan for them, but they also need somebody who's like, look, this is how you delegate. Like, we do all the social media, okay, and we can design the sales process for you. But like, mm-hmm. this is how you hire a salesperson. This is how you don't become the one who has to do all the consults and then get mad at us because you can't book a consult until 8 weeks out. Nobody wants to wait 2 months for you to hire because you're also doing legal work and also doing this and also doing that. And so, you know, we talked through what it would look like. And ultimately, I just think it was too conflict of interest-y for me to still be on both. Cause like I've sent some of my clients over to Legalese. They've sent some of their clients over to me for coaching, but this way it's a little bit less forced from that standpoint. So as I got, you know, he bought me out there and I started doing the coaching stuff with the time that I was spending on the marketing company, and then, you know, had a decent amount of clients. I don't want to say come with me, but they stayed at Legalese and also added coaching with me onto it. And then, you know, grew from there.
That's super cool. Yeah. It's interesting. You gotten to meet my husband now, and, you know, obviously I don't have like a law license, but you know, I worked with him for a while, and we call it like forward and beyond clients when there are clients of his and a client of mine, but you know, it's separate. And I do recommend like other attorneys depending on where they're thinking geographically and such like that. But it's hard to find someone who has that right mindset. And so it's good when you have a marketing company or, you know, a lawyer to refer to. So you do a lot in the community with Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Do you want to talk about how you gotten involved with them and what you're doing with that?
Sure. So it's an interest. I mean, the short story is they hosted a happy hour at Rock Pit Brewing, and I showed up and I hit it off with the people on the board that were there at this point, like 5 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long, but it was pre-COVID. And then, you know, they asked me to join the board. Longer than that, I started out as a prosecutor. My wife was a PD. So, and she actually ended up teaching for a year when I first opened my firm. And really, it, like, she did it from the standpoint of there were so many of these kids that by the time they came through the system, there was nothing that could be done. Like, you needed to get to them before they're already at criminal case 1, 2, 3, 5, 12, whatever. So she was hoping teaching would help with some of that stuff. And it did for some. But we were trying to see like what else. And so this opportunity arose and I was like, this is awesome. Here's the opportunity for a lot of these kids to get one-on-one mentorship. We have like 150 kids in the area that are partnered up. So, and it's all the partnerships are same sex. So it's boys with boys, it's girls with girls. There are some that have a family, set up, but like it's designed to give them that mentorship opportunity. It's designed to give them that path forward. A lot of our littles are coming from, you know, single parent homes or being raised by a grandparent or something along those lines. And so now they have the opportunity to connect with somebody in the community long term. We had one match that was 13 years that the little and the big were connected until they aged out and they're still connected. We've had bigs pay for college for their littles. One of the people on our board was actually adopted by his big brother when his parents unfortunately passed away and went through some stuff. And just, it's crazy to hear the stories. And a lot of them are like, this is happening half a mile away from where you live. This is happening just down the street. This is happening to a kid at your kid's school. You know, it's amazing to see the difference that one connection can make.
It is interesting. I think there's a quote, I think it's Margaret Mead, but like never underestimate like what like a group can do. And I know when I went through, I come from a socioeconomically disadvantaged like background and with my family. And it was, you know, very blue collar, very like tough. And I started to kind of stray from, you know, doing my schoolwork and those types of things. But there was a program through the Christian Service Center that's here in Orlando. And they assigned me a tutor and she kind of like got me back on the right path and talked about, you know, so I was able to do really well in like middle school, which then paved the way to do really well in high school, which then paved the way for me to, you know, go on and be the first in my family to go to college and all the other things. But it was interesting, about 10 years ago, I ran into her at like a West Orange Chamber like event. And I'm like, Mary? And she's like, Amy? And she's like, and then she shouts to everybody, this was one of my free kids. So I'm like, oh my God. But I'm like, but you know, cause she was like, these are one of my like free kids that I've, but you never know. Like, I think that with her and other people kind of enter, you know, I was in this one atmosphere that in this ecosystem that I couldn't see, you know, where I lived, like a path to, you know, going to college or having a professional job and all those other things. And I think Big Brothers, Big Sisters, you know, all these other programs, you may not think that it's a big deal, but I think to a lot of children, they don't have the perspective, and they need that big brother. They need that big sister to help them like see and like move forward. And so I'm a big proponent of giving back to the community. I think probably because I know from personal experience that it can work. So anyways, so you've been involved for like five, do you have the same little this whole time or?
No, so I'm on the board. So I don't.
Oh, just on the board. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. I don't currently have a, I'm not currently a big, I'm on the board.
Okay. Okay, cool. Okay. So you've been an entrepreneur for a while now. Do you have any advice to someone who would just be starting out with their own business?
Ooh, that's a great question. Yeah, I guess, I mean, the problem for me is, so yes, but my advice is going to be like sort of esoteric, right? Like you need to figure out what advice you actually need.
That, you know, is pretty esoteric.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, we're all different. And so I think, yeah. I don't know anybody that will tell you don't have a mentor, but I want to tell you have different mentors. So like I have mentors that are lifestyle mentors, and like they're lawyers, but I really like the lifestyle that they have. I have mentors that are trial lawyers that, like, you know, when my wife gets stuck on a case situation, like we can talk to these people about like, how do you think we should handle this? I have mentors who are much more business savvy than I am. Like, hey, I'm stuck on this business issue. And so like, you need to have this group as much as possible. And you would be shocked the amount of people willing to give you true and honest advice for free. You know, like the amount of defense attorneys that talked to me about opening up a criminal defense firm at the beginning was awesome. I didn't know enough to ask them more business questions, which is what let, like, I thank God, knock on wood, never had a case problem, but had a ton of business problems because I didn't ask them those questions, or I didn't ask the right people and whatever. And so figure out where you can build some of these relationships in your industry, outside your industry. These may be referral partners. These may be, you know, people older than you, younger than you, more experienced, less experienced, but like everybody has something to share. You just have to find the right people that, you know, match your core values, that you get along with, that you enjoy, and then, you know, roundtable problems and get their advice. And sometimes you won't take it, but in those situations, I've always not taken the advice with a lot more understanding of why than when I just did it a certain way without talking to anybody.
I think when I'm listening to you talking about that, I think that an entrepreneur at the beginning can make the decision of whether they want to be busy or whether they want to be productive. And I think if they have like a better idea of what it is that they want to do and accomplish and have the right mentors, then they could be like more productive versus just, I'm going to open up my doors and take, you know, everything that kind of comes in. Perhaps.
And I'm cognizant. There's a time and a place for that. Like on day one, great. But the sooner that you can say no to really bad fits, somewhat bad fits, kind of bad fits, the better, which goes back exactly right into what you just said, Amy, like that focus. But, you know, I think it would be short-sighted of us not to say like, look, on day one, like, sure, you know, you take the $10 million cool opportunity that isn't exactly the right ice cream, you are in the place now where you can say no, which is a luxury that all entrepreneurs should work towards, because that's how, in my opinion, that's how you become successful. That's how you become profitable. That's how you become, you know, whatever word you want to use, by being selective. You just have to work towards that day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you get better idea of like where you will want to move your boundaries and move the line if you want to move the line. And so on this particular matter, it's related to an estate. The person's dead. So like, I'm not going to get like repeat business versus, you know, someone came to me and then maybe wants me to do an adjustment, but it's like, I have a long lasting relationship. But I think having the foresight and having parameters with yourself for you to make those, you know, decisions that are key for long-term success. So,
and that's, to me, that's the interesting thing to come out of COVID. Like, obviously COVID was awful. Millions of people died, etc. That being said though, like I've talked to so many lawyers where that was the first time in their career that they ever weren't busy. Like they ever had the chance to really breathe and think about their practice, their life, their future. And so, you know, for some of them, it confirmed that they were doing the right thing and they just had to wait for the court to reopen. They had to wait for people to drive again. For others, it was changing their practice area to work with the group of clients they truly enjoyed. For others, it was leaving law altogether. But like exactly what you said, like I think it's easy to be busy to the detriment of thinking things out, thinking things through, thinking things specifically. And so like you need to carve out that time to think, you know, on if you're opening up shop day one, then every, you know, 30 days, every, at the end of every month, carve out an hour to just like, what went well this month? Mm. What went poorly this month? What can I do better? What mm-hmm. clients did I like? What clients don't I like? What are the clients I like have in common? What are the clients I don't like have in common? And sometimes you'll find they all came from the same referral source. Sometimes they all came from the same marketing channel. Sometimes they all want the same thing. Sometimes they all gave you the old, hey, and you know, I'm good for paying you what I agreed to pay, which to me in criminal, when I did criminal defense was, and I was never getting paid on the case again, 100% of the time when that statement was made. But yeah, I mean, you just, you know, you go through these things and you have that reflection time, and then you can work that to, you know, taking 4 hours off every quarter, and then you can work it to taking a day off a week or, you know, whatever that is to really have that time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's about like playing the tape and yeah, what went right, what went wrong. I started having my monthly management meetings again with like my office manager and my like executive assistant to go through marketing, sales, operations, finance, and human resources. And then kind of like talking about the different areas. But when we were talking about sales numbers, which ties into finance and revenue, I got a little bit of a fear mindset like at the end of like last year. And I was taking some clients that were not like right fit and had sob stories and were victims, but they had really attractive properties. And then that just caused a bunch of like chaos and like whiplash, like in my business that I'm like kind of coming out of now. But I think taking the time to like, whether you're alone or with members of your team or whatever, being like honest, like, and also you have to like learn the lessons about it to then not repeat it again. I think if I was just to like not analyze, you know, why were I having these issues? What part did I have in it and have that accountability, then I'm not learning anything and it can happen again.
Well, and that's the, I don't want to say the, it's not the problem with going back to the tape because you have to do it. It's the risk is either you only go back to the tape for the bad things, you don't go back to the tape for the good things, or especially for lawyers, you're looking at the results. So like, you know, if anybody listening to this is a lawyer, you want to do this self-reflection, go to the tape, like when the case is out with the jury before the verdict comes back, because you may lose the case that you really could not have done anything differently. You may win a case that you made a bunch of mistakes. And so like, you really have to figure out either what's the right lesson to learn from this or when's the right time to have this reflection. Instead, it might not necessarily be at the end of each matter, each case, each client, each sale, whatever it is. It really depends upon your industry or your involvement in it.
That makes sense too. Yeah, absolutely. Could you share like a personal philosophy or mantra that guides you in both your personal and professional life?
Sure. I have one and I've been told that it's wrong. I thought it was a saying that I just changed. High seas raise all boats. Okay. Like I tell myself that multiple times per day. And it is mind-boggling to me the concept that how much like we can make the world a better place. If everybody made the world a better place, the world would be a better place. Even if all of us picked up one piece of trash off the ground, even if all of us held the door for one person behind us, like these small things can snowball, can dovetail through and through. You know, me sitting down to have lunch with somebody maybe gets me a case, maybe gets them a case, maybe gets either of us to have a conversation where we think of something that is beneficial to a client, or making a connection for somebody else that helps the person who made the connection and the two people that got connected, or the client who gets referred up. Like, it's crazy to me. And yet we find so many people that have this scarcity mindset of like, I can't help anybody else because there's only so much to go around. when I don't think the world exists that way.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think we talked about it briefly at our lunch, but there are people that are in my industry that feel that if I'm successful, it means that they can't be successful. But I don't know. Orlando is on fire like a Nick Cage movie. So there is plenty of business to go around here in Orlando.
But it's not even, I checked. And it's not even the business. It's like the you and their kids being in the same class.
Yeah.
It's running for some position. It's trying to get a signature to change something. I don't know. I think everybody gets so caught up in this, like, how big is the pie, instead of realizing that there's also cake and donuts and cupcakes and cookies. And that's just dessert, to take this analogy farther. Like, if we all really invested in other people, the return on that investment is amazing, either directly to us or indirectly to us. You know, if I sit down with another lawyer and give them some advice that helps them grow a book of business, maybe they send a case back to me. Maybe they don't. Maybe we have a client in common and they argue something better that helps both of our clients. Maybe they become a judge on a case later. Maybe they donate to my wife decides to run for judge. I don't know. Like, there's a thousand opportunities that come out of all of this. You just have to genuinely believe in an abundance mindset or a growth mindset, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. And you will see so many opportunities to do nice things for other people, who then do nice things for other people, who then do nice things for other people, that, you know, comes back to all of us to have a better life.
That is so true. I think just having that openness and that willingness to help someone else can be so transformative. You don't think it's kind of like talking about the big brothers and big sisters, like we were talking about earlier, is you don't know what that one interaction with someone could be. And I've had some of those, and I've gone back to people and given, you know, thanks to them. Like, really, you made me, you know, think about things, you know, differently. Yeah, I agree with that. Anything else that we didn't talk about that you want to talk about?
Who's your ideal listener to this podcast?
Yeah, so I have a lot of people that are either entrepreneurs or business leaders, but they're wanting to learn more about, you know, commercial real estate and business. I've had some attorneys also listening to it, and, you know, they're just looking for, you know, life hacks or just general, you know, information related to that. So that's my ideal listener.
Okay. So then I got two more things then from that.
Okay.
The first one is figuring out what enough looks like for you. That might be enough clients. That might be enough money. That might be enough time. That might be enough whatever. Because, like, you know, we talked about the more versus less, but, like, at some point you can hit that and be totally fine. You don't need less. You don't want less. You don't want more. You don't need less. You don't need more. Knowing that becomes huge, because the business that you run that needs 10 clients a month is going to be a lot different than the same exact business that needs 1,000 clients a month, in terms of problems, in terms of staff size, in terms of costs, in terms of advertising, in terms of whatever. So enough becomes huge. And the flip side to that is, I am not scalable. You are not scalable. And a person is not scalable. A business needs to scale to that level of enough through systems, automation, delegation, not doing things, you know, whatever it is along those lines. I think a lot of firm owners, E-Myth, Michael Gerber, have you read it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes. So I think a lot of people read E-Myth and are like, oh, I need to focus on working on my business. And they're like, so tomorrow I'm going to stop doing all the work. And that's not the situation. No. It's like, I'm going to build the system. I'm going to hire the person. I'm going to train the person. I'm going to supervise the person. And now I'm working on the business while they do it. I think we skip a lot of the, I think we jump from I'm doing everything to I'm not doing anything without getting that center part. And so enough helps you know what that center part looks like. You know, if you want, like, we do 10 cases a month, our cases take about 8 months to resolve. That's 80 cases in each pod. So now I've got a lawyer, a legal assistant, and a paralegal. Right now we've got one pod, but, like, that's our number. That's what we need. So at the point that we grow, I need 10 more cases a month to get me 80 cases at any point with a second pod. and on so that I know each and every one of those clients is serviced correctly. I'm not just looking for more cases. I'm not just looking for less cases. I'm looking for this flow that we can handle.
Oh, I like that. I like that. And I think it's interesting because if you don't have a metric of what you're trying to achieve, then you're just, there is nothing. And, oh, well, I know what you're talking about. Going from doing the work to not doing the work is, I did that. Like we bought a building like in 2019 and I, at the time, was doing all the production, but then I thought I would hire all these people to do all the work and everything was gonna be great. But like, I should have continued doing cases, well, not cases, but you know, deals, and, you know, just brought on like a couple, like one small pod, right? Not all these people. I think that's great advice.
Thank you. And look,
having been through it, I can see the benefit of doing things more incrementally rather than just psh, like a fire hose.
And the crazy thing to me is like, you can change your mind at any point. You know, right. Like, okay, I want to work towards handling 5 deals at a time. And then you can have that time. All right, well, you know, I really enjoy the deals. I want to work my way up to 10. Okay, so now like, these are the changes we should start aiming towards. Well, now, okay, I want to do 0 deals. All right, then these are the changes. You can always change what the focus is, but you need to have that focus. You need to have that plan. You need to have that end goal in mind so that you can make the 1,000 little decisions to get there. That's why like I love vision boards, not because I think that by putting something on a board, it will magically happen, but by staring at that board, by staring at the giant yacht, by staring at the vacation, by staring at whatever, you will subconsciously make 1,000 decisions that get you there. You will prioritize savings to pay for the trip. You will prioritize talking to people about their vacation to figure out the tips and tricks of this location. You will prioritize, you know, whatever it is to make these things happen subconsciously by having some sort of conscious end goal in mind.
Mm. Yeah, I think I've done vision boards a few times, and just having that, like, I have golf on my vision board because I want to golf more. I need to probably, instead of trying to do one big day of golf, perhaps, you know, smaller sessions, maybe just go to the driving range a couple, you know, days a week, but.
Or Topgolf networking, you know,
that's what we did last time we hung out. Right? I know. Wasn't that fun?
It's a win-win-win.
That was a win-win-win. I should have brought my own clubs too, though. That would have been fun. But yeah, I think like just finding ways to make it happen, and but it doesn't have to be in this like big huge way. So I think that's so true. And you said you had a second item.
Yeah, well, so like if you know enough, then that helps you with the delegation side, because like the problem becomes, at some point your system doesn't work. Like it works for 20 clients, it works for 4 employees, it doesn't work above that. So by knowing what enough is, you know what is going to break. You know what system you need to amend or change or person you need to hire or, you know, whatever. Like until the point that I need another pod, I don't need to move any of my legal assistants up to paralegal. But at the point that I know I want to do that, I like promoting from within. So then right. I need to identify who needs the skill set to go from legal assistant to paralegal and then fill the legal assistant spot. Is that somebody that's here? Is that somebody from out of the office? Is right. You know, if I hire an attorney and they're really good at X, then maybe they're better with this paralegal versus if they're really good at Y, then they need somebody who's more of this, you know, mindset or skill set or whatever we want to call it. There's a bunch of different ways to go about it, but you really have to have that overarching plan.
No, I'm going to take a piece of copy or paper after this call, and I'm literally going to write down like what is enough and think about it, because like I kind of feel like for me, it's like 2 or 3 new exclusives like a month, so that, you know, about half the deals tend to close. And so then, you know, I'm working out to where I will close, you know, like 12 to 16 deals or whatever a year, and then making sure they're of a certain quality. And so then I kind of have like a, like, you know, I should have this many calls to broach having my services. And then, you know, if I start to go above or below that, then I understand what that is. I think that's key.
Well, and so, you know, and you and I are both low volume, high impact, high touch, high.
Yes.
Whatever. And so knowing that you don't need to make 1,000 cold calls a day or whatever, you know, whatever the numbers would be, allows you, and I mean, and I can't cold call, but like, it allows us to invest in people more, invest in current clients more, invest in former clients more, invest mm-hmm. in referral sources more, because you don't have to do that much top of funnel marketing. Whereas somebody who's mm-hmm. more volume, it may be a waste of time for them to go to a 2-hour lunch because they could call 27 people, because they could automate 50,000 emails to go out in that time frame. Like, it really, you know, it's not that anything is right or wrong. It's right or wrong for you or your situation or your business or your ideal client or your plan.
Well, and then I find that if you have your high volume and you're like, for instance, that's a broker that wants to have like a really strong like listing practice, and you don't know any of the people that you're like calling, then you're having to make all of these calls. I find if I maintain really good bonds with people in the community, I could go and let's just say there's a office park, you know, down the street from me. I can take the 10 buildings in the office park, and then I can literally find out where the owner of each of those buildings like lives, and I can mail them a handwritten note and do like 10 of those a week and get like one call back. And I've created more of a personal touch rather than, you know, making like 1,000 calls. And, you know, I think it depends on what you want to do. And for me, I really like this more like high touch. I like high impact. That's a really cool way of putting it.
Thank you. It's I wish I could take credit. It's just like, somebody else said it and I loved it as well. So, but it's true. And again, and that change yeah. that completely changes what you do, because, you know, if it was somebody looking for 1,000 deals a month, they're not going to be able to do the handwritten note to each person. That would take all day. And so like, you figure out where the things are. And from the client standpoint, you know, some clients are going to appreciate your note and they're going to love the one-on-one and they're going to love the more high touch. Other clients are going to want it to be done cheaper. They're going to want it to be done faster. They're going to want it to be done without the conversation. You know, so it's not everyone's a right fit for everything. The biggest thing you can control is what your own business does, and hope that that attracts the kind of people that you want to work with.
That's what I have found with the handwritten notes. Either some people think that's like, whoa, I really like that craft artisanal kind of approach. And then other people might be like, who is this person? Writing
a note to their house. I mean, mine sit on the right here in easy reach.
I've gotten one of those. I love it.
'Tis ever the time for a note. It's right there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of my metrics.
Is what?
I keep track of how many notes I write a month.
There you go. Do you track who you sent them to?
Yeah, I make it in my CRM. You can say, okay, set note, set note, set note, had phone call, you know, last time I touched people, you know.
I have to do that. Cause like I at least do thank you notes on Thursday. Otherwise I'll do them as they come up. And every now and then I'll go to like the next week and be like, did I send a note to so-and-so, or did I just tell myself I wanted to write a note to them? And I'm like, that 1 week gap. So I like that. I'm going to start working that into the CRM.
You can work in the CRM, or if you use a paper calendar, you can highlight them too. I do both because I'm OCD. I like to check, cross-check. Make sure it's like all done. Yeah.
Nothing is as enjoyable as crossing that thing off the list or highlighting it or checking the box. Like, to me, that is the most amazing intrinsic motivation of just getting all these tasks done is such a great feeling.
Well, believe it or not, we are 49 minutes in. So we will save the second thing you're going to want to talk about. We are going to do a part two, because finally I have started to have repeating guests. So are you cool with that?
Absolutely.
All right. So how do people find you?
Sure. I used to think I was the only Jordan Ostroff. I have now come to find out there are two of us. The other one is a salesperson out of like Boston. And if you're listening and you know him, he gets so many job offers to my email. So like, if you're his boss, lock that dude up, because he is doing a ton right. So I might be the second most successful Jordan Ostroff, but depending upon the platform, like on Instagram, TikTok, I'm at Lawyer with a Life. On Facebook and LinkedIn, I'm at Jordan Ostroff. Again, there's two of us. I'm the bearded lawyer in the Hawaiian shirt. So pretty easy to find.
Yeah. Well, and I love it. I think you wear your Hawaiian shirts. And you like your shorts and no sneakers, right?
Unless I'm running. Like, I mean, it was 50. I'm wearing shorts and flip-flops right now. It was 50 degrees when I left. It's fine. It's better when it's 90, but you know, I enjoy the cold weather, knowing that we'll have 8 months of craziness again soon.
Wow. Well, I hope people find you. Your insights have been great. I've made a whole bunch of notes for myself, and I hope my listeners get a lot of value from this as well. So I want to thank you again for sharing everything, and thank you for everyone tuning into Performance Mindset Podcast. This is your host, Amy Calandrino, signing off.